This is Garden Talk. I'm Jill Nadeau, filling in for Larry Mueller, who is off to do a little hunting this weekend. Lisa Johnson is back in the studio with us, and she's a UW Extension horticulture educator for Dane County. Do you have questions about overwintering plants? What about caring for trees or shrubs? Well, we'd like to hear from you. Give us a call, 1-800-642-1234. All the lines are open right now, so please go ahead and give us a call, or you can always send an email to ideas@wpr.org. Lisa, it's so good to see you.
Hey, good to see you too.
Do things slow down a little bit for you when it gets a little colder out?
For a brief period, and then because all the educational programs
sure.
are in the winter, then it really winds up. My actual busiest months are February and March.
Really? Wow. Who'd have thought? Well, I don't think that I am the only one that has taken their mum plants into the house and some other plants with hopes that it's going to get warmer. And, you know, I can put them back out, but you know that's not going to happen.
Probably not at this point.
So what's the best way for me to take care of those mum plants?
Well, it depends on what kind you have. If you have hardy mums, the best thing would have been to plant them. Hardy mums are going to need some kind of cold period in order to bloom. So if you had like a heated garage, you know, where it gets into the 40s or something like that, the thing is, at this point, you don't want to give it too fast a slow down or a lowering of temperatures. Mm-hmm. Like I wouldn't just, you know, chuck it out into the night, especially in those small pots.
Yeah.
You could probably keep it going as a house plant inside. I'm not sure how well it would bloom for you in the spring.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if it's a florist mum,
right.
then they're not hardy here.
Mm-hmm.
And the only way to keep it going is to keep it inside as a house plant.
Now, if someone had left their hardy mum outside, but mm-hmm. not in the ground, is it too late at this point?
I would put it in the ground.
Right away.
Yeah, it's the problem with mums is that often if you plant them in fall, even when you're supposed to, like in September or, mm-hmm. or early October, they often don't get rooted in well enough. And particularly if we have a wet winter, they don't survive well.
Right.
So now if you live up in like Adams County, then, you know, you've got sand.
Sure,
so,
sure.
But then you've got colder temperatures too, but possibly better snow cover. Anyway,
you never know.
Yeah. You want to make sure you plant it someplace with good drainage, and you want to leave the foliage on at least 12 inches because that helps to protect the crown.
Okay. Should you do anything else? Put leaves or mulch of some sort?
Now here's the thing again. It's not a bad idea to mulch it a little bit lightly, but I would use something like leaves that stay crinkly, not ones that mat down.
Okay.
Because, again, that drainage issue, and if there's too much moisture around the crown, they're very prone to rot.
Makes sense. Well, we do have a few calls already. If you want to join in, have a question, give us a call, 1-800-642-1234. And of course, you can always send an email, send a picture also to ideas@wpr.org. So let's go to the phones, and we have Dan in Plover waiting. Hi, Dan.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
So we've got some garlic that we've been meaning to plant, and I'm wondering if it's too late. We've got snow cover. Not a lot. That's some, you know, there's grass, but I'm looking at grass and snow.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just wondering if it's too late to plant that. And if it's not, and we go ahead and plant it, what's the best way to do that?
Well, I would say that as long as the ground isn't frozen, I usually like to err on the side of planting a little later rather than earlier with garlic, because if it starts to sprout, then, you know, then you have issues too. So, I would say go ahead and plant it now at the, you know, the recommended depth for whichever variety you have. Do you have hardneck or do you have soft neck?
Oh boy, I'm not sure. It's
okay.
On the kitchen counter and I'm not at home.
Yeah, not a big deal. You plant them both the same way. So what you might want to do also is possibly put some straw on. Well, actually, I should ask what kind of soil you have. If you have super heavy clay, I might not recommend that. What kind of soil do you have?
Pretty sandy soil.
Okay. Then you might want to put, say, 4 inches of straw on top of after you've planted the garlic, just to insulate it a little bit. Usually with a lot of things, what we do is we want to wait until after the ground freezes to make sure that things don't come up. At this point, though, I guess I'd like the garlic to get rooted in just a tick, so maybe give it some mulch, even though the ground isn't frozen.
Okay, well, good luck with that, Dan. I've always wanted to try it. It sounds like a fun experiment.
Yeah, garlic's pretty easy to grow.
Now, why is it that it needs to be planted now? What's the reasoning behind that?
Well, there are what we call fall or winter bulbs, and there are spring bulbs.
Oh.
And the fall planted bulbs, whether they're daffodils or whether they're garlic, need to get rooted in the fall, and then they are going to produce in the spring. And these are hardy bulbs that are going to, you know, last. We do have some summer bulbs that are not hardy here, things like well, it's actually a corm, but gladiolus that you would plant, you know, during the spring or summer.
Like those dahlias that I haven't dug out
yet.
Yeah,
yeah. And those are technically tubers either. I was trying to think of a true bulb. There are some, but yeah.
Yeah. Okay, great. Well, let's go back to the phones. And we've got Brett in Sparta. Brett, what can we help you with?
Hi, thank you for taking my call. We have a couple of old apple trees in our yard, and I was just curious about some pruning advice if now or in the springtime would be best. And also, while the apples are delicious and the children love eating and baking with them, they did have some blemishes on them. I wondered if there was any way to reduce that next year.
Sure. Okay, well, let's start with the pruning. Dormant season pruning is what is recommended for apples. And usually they tell you to wait until the apple is fully dormant, and they're not fully dormant now. So usually what that's going to mean is February or March. I'm kind of a pruning wimp, so I like to wait until March when the snow has gone down a little bit, but they're still dormant. And we have a really nice publication at the Learning Store site. If you just Google Learning Store UWEX, you will then be able to put into the search box apples, and all of our publications on apples will come up. But there's one on pruning and training apples, and there's a whole protocol from taking out suckers to making sure that you have your limbs pointing in the right direction and thinning out the center and so on. It's like a whole hour's worth of talk, so so I'll just say that much about it and direct you to the publication for that. It should be done every year, every other year. If you have a standard apple, like that was grown from a seedling, it's even more important than with a dwarf apple that doesn't grow quite as fast, although they're still pretty darn vigorous. And then the blemishes on apples, boy, that can be caused by insects or diseases or both. We do have also a publication at that website on controlling pests on apple trees, which addresses both situations. Do you know what kind of apple tree you have?
I don't. I do know that they're two different varieties just from eating them.
Yep.
But I have no idea what they are.
Okay. The reason I asked is because there are some apple trees that are bred specifically to be disease resistant, and that's awesome because apples are very prone to disease, but they're also very prone to insects. And most people who have apples, whether they use an organic spray or whether they use a non-organic spray, do have to put on something eventually. We have some trees in our teaching garden, and we're getting to the point now where we've had them in for about 4 years and the bugs have finally found them. So, yeah, fruit trees are a bit of work. You do have to, you know, you have to thin the fruits, you have to do the pruning. And it's a good way, though, to teach kids about how, you know, where your food comes from and that it takes some skills to grow it. And they can help you look for insects and monitor for insects, and they can help you pick. If you decide that you want to bag apples instead of spraying, they can help you with that process.
Yeah.
Put them to work.
They can draw on those bags. Yeah,
yeah,
that's a great idea.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah.
That'll
if you want to learn more about that, You can Google that, but a good place to find out about it is the ATRA website, ATTRA. I always forget what that stands for. It's like, alternative technology or something like that. It has information on organic growing of almost any crop that you want to know.
Oh, wonderful. That's a good resource right there.
Yeah, I will have to remember what that stands for.
Well, and in the learning store, too. I mean, we say that a lot, but it's so true. There's so much information, and it's really easy to understand.
Yes, yes. Mm-hmm. The specialists write it just really, really well, and it's very easy to follow.
Do a great job. Okay, Brett, well, have fun with those apples and your kids. Next, we've got Mary Beth in New Berlin. Hi, Mary Beth.
Hi there. I have a hibiscus tree that I did everything right with this year. I brought it in when it got into the 40s, and it had dozens of blossoms that have mostly fallen off now. And I make it smaller because it's huge. And I don't know how to prune it.
Okay. Well, unfortunately, it's not the greatest time of year to prune it. The best time of year would be, say, late March or early April, and you could take it back by, say, a third. You can do a little bit of pruning on it right now, but you really don't want to. When you prune, you're actually encouraging new growth, and because it's got less light now, both because of the season and because it's indoors, you really don't want to encourage it to put on a whole lot of spindly new growth going into fall. So I expect you probably will see some leaves dropping off. Often that happens when you move it from outside to indoors. If you do see that, you know, you can do a little bit of pruning in those areas. You could do a little bit of thinning out as well, but normally most of the heavier pruning you wait until at least April or late March.
Okay, thanks, Mary Beth. Appreciate the question. Next up, we've got Jim in Rosendale. Hi, Jim. What's your question?
Hi, thanks for taking the call, of course. I have two questions, actually. The first would be, can you transplant bushes and shrubs and small trees in fall? Can you? And then the question is, ornamental plants, can you otherwise?
Okay, we're having a little problem getting or hearing you, Jim. You're kind of going in and out. But from what I can tell, he wanted to know if you can transplant trees in the fall. Oh, we lost him completely. Like lilacs or pines.
Yeah.
And then the other question was bringing in plants like geraniums.
Yeah. Okay. So the answer to the first question about transplanting is, or was it planting or transplanting?
Gosh, you know, I can't remember what it was.
I saw it on the screen and then
it
went away.
Well, either one, Lisa.
Okay. Well, the answer is maybe.
Okay.
Because, or yes, or no. The reason for that is I did see the pine on there. Mm-hmm. You should not plant or transplant any kind of evergreen in the fall. That should be done in the spring. A lot of our deciduous shrubs and trees, though, can be transplanted in the fall, but it's better to do it earlier rather than quite this late.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you did get a bargain something or other at the nursery, and actually I still have one shrub I have to put in the ground yet. Especially, you know, if it's deciduous, I would say go ahead and do it ASAP. The thing that we worry about this late in the season is if the ground freezes and it doesn't get established well enough. And that particularly happens with our conifers or evergreens, is that they just don't root in very well. And then with winter burn and so on, they can really run into problems in the late fall, even early fall. So we usually say spring for those. But yeah, you can transplant a lot of things. It's actually a great season to do it, but preferably September or October or even early November. We're getting a little iffy now.
Yeah.
Now, if you're down in Milwaukee or something where the temperatures are still pretty good, then you could probably still get away with that kind of thing.
And keep your fingers crossed.
Yeah, yeah.
You never know what the winter's going to be like.
Oh, and the geraniums.
Those
can be brought in and treated as houseplants. What some people like to do, though, is cut them pretty far back and let them dry, water them kind of lightly about once or twice a month. You know, kind of keep them in a dormant state. You want to keep them someplace cool if you want to overwinter them that way rather than a houseplant. And then you know, bring them out when it gets to be, oh, middle of March, and start watering them and so on. But you can grow them as houseplants, especially if you have a good west or south window. They do pretty well. You can pinch them back if they start to get a bit leggy.
I've seen some beautiful ones that are houseplants.
Yeah, that have overwintered. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Sure. We're talking with Lisa Johnson on Garden Talk today. She is a UW Extension horticulture educator for Dane County. I want to say Door. I'm sorry. It's Dane County. Our on-air producer today is Jason Butler, and Tyler Ditter is our board operator. Do you have a gardening question or comment? Give us a call, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. This is the Larry Mueller Show. I am Jill Nadeau, and we're talking with Lisa Johnson on Garden Talk today. Our phone lines are just about full, but you can still get in, 1-800-642-1234. And Lisa, let's just go right back to the phones. We have Jan in Viroqua. Hi, Jan.
Hi, everyone. I have three very young fruit trees, a plum, a cherry, and an apple, and I'm wondering how to protect them for overwintering.
Okay. Protect them from rodents or
everything.
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 Okay. So do you have deer in your area?
I'm sorry?
Do you have deer?
No, I'm in town, so no.
Okay.
They're not quite that bold.
Yeah, that's, well, we've got them at our teaching garden coming right up to the building.
Oh, yeah.
So the biggest danger for fruit trees, they should be hardy in terms of winter temperatures, so that's not an issue. But voles and rabbits girdling the bark or deer can be a problem. So if you have problems with voles or rabbits, what I usually recommend is using some hardware cloth that you can get at either a big box store or your local hardware store. The quarter-inch mesh is the best because those little beady vole guys yeah. can get through things like chicken wire, and they can even sometimes get through that half-inch mesh. So I like to use the quarter-inch, and you wrap it around the trunk, and then you might want to splay it out a little bit at the base so that you're sure to get the base of the trunk. And then I use landscape staples. They're about 6 inches long, and they're shaped like a U. And you use those to make sure that the wire cage isn't going to come off. Now, I don't recommend the type of tree wrap where you wrap it tightly around the tree because that can girdle the trunk and interfere with respiration. I much prefer the wire, but you need to take it off again in the spring. You can use different kinds of things. I usually use either zip ties or a thin wire to close the loop. But you're basically making a little fortress. And I like to get the 36-inch tall materials because if you get snow, then, yeah, and you get...
It's a little ladder for those
exactly,
little critters.
Exactly, exactly. So, so that's what we do at the teaching garden.
So, Lisa, how long should you do that on a tree?
Depends on your rodent pressure.
Okay.
Particularly, you want to protect them when the tree is young, mm-hmm. Like the first, you know, four years or so. Once the bark starts to get thicker, they're a lot less attractive. But if you have a lot of voles or mice, as a general rule, then it, you know, doesn't hurt to do it. Just takes a few minutes
sure.
to take care of. Sometimes what we'll also do is put a little bit of bark around the bottom just to make sure that they can't tunnel underneath the wire.
Okay. Thanks, Jan, for that question. Let's go to Barb next in St. Charles, Illinois. Hi, Barb.
Hi. I have landscapers that had put in knockout roses. Mm-hmm. Redid our landscaping last year, and they didn't survive the winter. They wouldn't warranty them, and I know they're supposed to be a hardier type of rose, so we replanted them again because mm-hmm. the landscape was designed to have them in. And just wondering, I kind of looked up some information. I know you can kind of wrap them up and tuck them underneath the soil, but that seemed like a lot of work. Any recommendations?
Sure. Well, first of all, knockout roses often do die back to the ground, but then they come back from the roots. They're not a grafted rose, so they're... So often they will come back that way. What you might want to do, now I'm not a big fan of rose cones, but you can use rose cones as long as they have, there's usually a little either holes in the top or there's a lid that you can take on and off if it starts to get too warm. So that's one thing that you could do. Put a rose cone, put a brick on the top so the thing doesn't fly away. or you can mound up a little bit of leaves or straw around the plant and then surround it with chicken wire. Usually you don't have problems with rodents getting in and eating roses, although, you know, it can happen. If you have heavy rabbit or vole pressure, you might want to use that hardware cloth we were just talking about, you know, to make sure that that they don't come in and make a nest and chew on your plant. Usually they don't need a whole lot of protection. I'm not sure what growing zone St. Charles is in.
It's just a little south of Milwaukee, probably.
Huh. I am surprised they died because they were bred in the Milwaukee area, but we did have an unusual winter last year.
When were they put in, Barb? What time of year?
In the spring.
In the spring. That's really strange.
That is unusual.
Yeah. Do you have really heavy soil?
No. And they came in and, you know, amended the soil, so it was, it was a healthy... beds.
Huh. What variety were they?
I'm not sure.
I mean, were they yellow? I guess that's the question
they
that
were
I'm asking.
Three yellow and three, and then seven of the pink.
Okay. And they all died?
All but two. One yellow survived and one pink, but it was not in good shape.
And you're sure they were totally deceased? They didn't they didn't come back at all?
Didn't come back at all.
Wow. Okay. That's really...
I had one other question. Sure. Resurrection lilies. I have a friend that
passed
on some bulbs to me, and I let them dry out, but I didn't get a chance to put them in yet. Is it still safe to put them in, or can I wait till the spring to put them in?
I would put them in now.
Okay, great. Well, thank you so much.
Yeah. Okay, great. All right, thanks, Barb. Next up, we have Ken in Fitchburg. Hello, Ken.
Hello. My question, hydrangeas. I have hydrangeas on the north side of my house, and I've had them for 10, 15 years, and I've never got them to bloom. I have incredible leaves and foliage, but they get close, but they never bloom, and I'm just deciding I should probably just take them out. But
Okay. Do you know what kind of hydrangea they are?
No, I don't.
Okay. The reason that I ask is because there are different pruning protocols for different types of hydrangeas that can, if you prune them at the wrong time, cause them not to bloom. There are also the things that I often see not blooming are the what are called the macrophylla or the big leaf hydrangeas. And the reason that they don't bloom is because the flower buds are not very hardy here. The leaves, the leaf buds are plenty hardy. So that would explain why you're getting a ton of leaves, but no blooms. If they're older and they used to bloom blue, they might be a variety called Nico Blue, which often does not bloom. The thing with the macrophyllas, and that would include things like the summer. Oh God, now I'm forgetting the name.
Don't ask
summer,
me. I have no idea.
Bah. I'll remember it in a minute. Anyway. Endless summer, and I remember that because our woody ornamental specialist calls it endless bummer because it often doesn't bloom the way it's supposed to here. It's south of here. It does great, but because they form their buds for blooming this year, and the buds have to overwinter in order to make the blooms. If they don't overwinter, then you don't get them. And also, if you prune them in the late fall, then, you know, of course, you're not going to get any either. Endless summer is supposed to produce buds that not only are the blooming on the old wood, but also on the new wood. And here in Wisconsin, it's a little iffy as to whether or not they actually do that. But we do have some hydrangeas, like the Annabelle hydrangeas, which are the big white puffy ones. Those are very reliable bloomers if you're in a partial shaded area. Or, you know, even half-day sun. And then the hydrangeas that have teardrop-shaped blooms, those bloom later in the summer. Those are extremely reliable. So you may just need to switch out the type that you have.
Now, he also said it's on the north side of his house.
Yeah.
Is that a little bit...
For a macrophylla, it's not the best. That also certainly could be affecting it. Most of the macrophyllas do prefer a little bit of shade, you know, an east or... east would be best so that they can get morning sun. But they also will bloom if they have enough moisture. They will bloom on a west location as well. North is a little iffy.
Mm-hmm. And hydrangeas are kind of touchy in most cases,
they
aren't
can
they?
Be, yeah, the macrophyllas mm-hmm. are. The paniculatas, the ones that bloom with the teardrop shape, those are... Those you can hardly keep them from blooming. They're so vigorous. So,
okay, great. Thanks for the question, Ken. We've got John in La Crosse up next. Hi, John.
Another hydrangea question.
Okay. Sure.
I have two potted geraniums that I purchased at Easter a couple of years ago, and I've been trimming them back in the fall, and then covering them with like a blanket in the garage to keep them over. Mm-hmm. And so far it's working, but I was just wondering if there's a better place to guarantee the survival of the plant mm-hmm. over winter.
Well, I'd say if it ain't, my usual advice, if it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Yeah.
If that's working for you, that's awesome. You can, as I was mentioning earlier, you can, if you have like a south window or a west window, they do work very well as houseplants too, and they do get a little spindly over the winter, but you then, you know, can cut them back by about half in the spring. So if you're concerned that it may get too cold in the garage, that's a way to do it as well. You could split it up. You could do one in the garage and one in the inside and hedge your bets that way.
Now, did you have a question about hydrangeas also, John?
Yeah, that was my question. When's the best time to split them?
Wait, I'm sorry. I thought we were talking about geraniums.
He had two questions.
No, hydrangeas.
Okay, was the one you just asked, was that a hydrangea question or was that a geranium?
Yes, it was a hydrangea.
Okay. I'm sorry. I heard you say
the geranium.
Yeah, okay.
I did too.
All right. So I just gave you advice for geranium. So now you know what to do with that. With the hydrangea, is this like a purple, blue, pink type?
Pink. One is a dark pink. One is a light pink.
Okay. Yeah. So usually those are... there are some, if you bought it like at a floral shop, it might not be hardy here. So again, though, I'd say, you know, if that's working for you, I would not with the hydrangea, though, bring it in, because if you, unless you have like a greenhouse, it's just really hard to get them to re-bloom again. But if you've been having good luck with them in the garage, I guess that's what I would continue to do.
Okay. Now, when you say if it doesn't get too cold in the garage,
mm-hmm.
what is too cold?
That's a very good question. For potted plants, you know, when the problem is that the root zone, depending on the size of the pot, the bigger the pot is, the more insulated the roots are. The smaller the pot is, the less insulated and the more likely you are to have issues. So I'd say like 40. You know, you don't want it to get to freezing or, God forbid, you know, 5 below or something
right.
like that is a problem. But, yeah, 35, 40 is probably as low as I would want that to go.
Okay, great
information. And, again, if they've been in the same pot, you might want to think about repotting them in the spring.
Okay. Next, we're going to talk to Mike in Madison. Hi, Mike. What can we help you with today?
Well, I've got two questions. I'll make them as brief as possible.
Okay.
I raise dahlias, and
nice.
I distribute them to a lot of people, the big red dahlias, and I store them in the basement. I let them dry out for a little while, mm-hmm. and then I seal them up in a tote to prevent any light getting in.
Mm-hmm.
The question I have with them, is that correct, or can I put them in an unheated garage? Then the second question that I have is I have a lot of young oak trees on my property I'd like to transplant, and is that possible? And if so, how? What's the best way to do it? And I'll take my answer off the air.
Okay, thanks, Mike.
All righty, thank you. Okay, so with the dahlias, I would not put it in an unheated garage. They, unless it doesn't get any colder than, say, 40, 45 degrees, most of those bulbs need to be kept. It depends on the bulb, but, you know, 35 is getting pretty cold for dahlias, so I'd say 40 would be probably ideal. 40, even 45 is a good good temperature. So I don't know how cold your unheated garage gets, but I know mine gets below freezing. So so I would try, and you want to keep them cool and, like you said, out of the light, and keep them fairly dry. You can check them every once in a while to make sure they're not getting shrivelly. And then the other question was, it went away already.
Oh, it was the oak seedlings.
Yeah. Okay. So the oak trees, the problem with young oaks, of course, is that they have a taproot. And so it can be difficult to transplant them. What people often do if they're trying to germinate acorns is they'll put them in a pot. You know, it can be a deep pot, but then, you know, grow them on in the pot for a couple of years, and that makes it a lot easier to transplant, because you don't lose a lot of the taproot. But you can transplant, you know, I'd say if you've already got them and they're not where they can be grown and you need to move them, preferably do it in the spring or the early fall. Would be the time to do it.
And try to dig down as far as you can.
Yeah, as far as you can, mm-hmm. to preserve as much of that taproot as possible.
Yeah, definitely. We've got a couple of lines open. If you have a question for Lisa, 1-800-642-1234. We did get an email from Sue in Green Bay, Lisa. She said that she planted 12 arborvitaes this year, and she'd like to know how to prevent rabbits from eating the lower portions of the trees mm-hmm. during the winter. And she had heard about using dog hair, but she's not sure exactly how and when to put that out.
Yeah. I would not rely on that to keep them away. It's more of a repellent, but boy, if they don't have anything to eat in the winter, mm-hmm. they are going to chew right.
Sure.
They are going to ignore that dog hair and go for the plant. Those kinds of repellents are better during the summer when they have other things that they can munch on. So I would use that same fencing that we talked about earlier. Yeah, it is an investment, but particularly, gosh, if you have things like deer, arborvitae's like top of their favorites list. And we have some outside the office across the street that look like mushrooms because they've been chewed up to the trunk,
sure.
and then about 4 or 5 feet up where they can't, then it bushes out and it looks really goofy. But it is a problem. So I would use that hardware cloth and the landscape staples that we talked about earlier with the 1/4-inch mesh.
And if they're not too large, could you use something like burlap to wrap them in?
Yeah, you can certainly do that mm-hmm. As well. That's probably a lot cheaper.
Mm-hmm.
It's just harder to keep up. And you want to make sure that you, of course, remove this early in the spring. What I've done is either use a soft kind of twine or use old ladies' pantyhose. Those are harder to find
they
now
really are.
In the stores, but mm-hmm. Sometimes like Walgreens or something mm-hmm. will have those for fairly inexpensive, but something stretchy that's you don't want to tie it so tight that you break branches. But often I do recommend, because arborvitae can split with heavy snow load, mm-hmm. that people do use some kind of twine to gently tie them up for winter if they've had problems with snow load splitting them before.
And you can get winter burn from those pretty easy too, can't
yeah,
you?
Yeah, yeah. Unfortunately, mm-hmm. arborvitaes are subject to that. If it's been a dry fall. Now, mm-hmm. we haven't had that issue, so we're good.
So
probably not a problem with winter burn this year unless we get like super cold temperatures and really cold, heavy winds.
Okay. So there are some pluses to a lot of water.
Yeah, believe it or not.
Well, let's go to Duluth, Minnesota and talk to Ryan. Hi, Ryan. What question do you have?
Hi, I recently moved into a house and they had a garden in the back and it was overgrown. It had raspberry bushes and probably 3 feet of weed. So I decided to tear it all out and till it up. And then I started my garden in there, but I still had an abundance of weeds.
Oh, yeah.
That kept growing back. What would be the best way to diminish that or get rid of that safely?
Okay. Well, first of all, my sympathies, because it sounds like you have a big seed bank.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, what happens when you till is that you bring all kinds of weed seeds up to the surface that were previously buried, and it can lead you to having more weeds. I guess the first question is, are you adverse to using herbicides?
Well, it is I'm doing it as a fruit and vegetable garden.
Okay. So I take it that's a no.
Right.
Okay.
I mean, I guess, I don't know. I'm not a garden expert. I don't know how harmful that would be to if it's going to affect the flowers of like the fruit and vegetables.
Sure.
Eating wise.
Yeah. Okay. So I just ask that so that I know, you know, which strategies, to recommend for you. So what I would usually do if it's a new bed, I take it you haven't put in any fruit trees or anything that's perennial yet? Or have
no.
you? Okay.
No.
So the easiest thing to do is to, again, till up the area, you get your weeds, you treat them with some kind of herbicide product, and then once they die, you take them out, you till it again, get that second flush of weeds, kill that off. Now, what you could use when your weeds come up is you could use cardboard, something like that, to smother them. But if you've got things like if you have thistles, those generally are not going to die under cardboard. If you have annual things like crabgrass, if you have other annual weeds, smothering can work. The other thing that you could do is you could cover the whole area with cardboard and then make cutouts and plant your fruit trees and your vegetables in there. The problem is that because you have that seed bank, you're just going to be battling for a while. And that's whether you're using herbicides or whether you're not. It's just either way, it's going to take some time and some patience and vigilance on your part to get rid of that. It's really hard when you inherit those situations to get that kind of thing under control. Some things to keep in mind if you don't decide to go the cardboard route, if you just decide to pull, make sure that you don't let things go to seed because they already outnumber you and they'll really outnumber you once
yeah.
they go to seed.
Yeah.
So that's probably the best advice that I have for you.
And you've learned the first rule of gardening, Ryan, which is you have to be patient.
Yeah.
You really
it
have
may
to be
take
patient.
A few seasons to get mm-hmm. the thing under control and it
yeah.
will take some work. If you decide that you don't want to go the cardboard route and you don't want to go the herbicide route, what I would do is instead of using seeds, I would use transplants. So, you know, like you buy your cabbage or your tomato in a little six pack and then mulch heavily and excuse me, hope that helps.
And mulching does make a big difference.
It does.
Mm-hmm. It really, and it helps to pull out those weeds too because the roots aren't so far down.
Right.
So, yeah. Lisa Johnson is our guest on Garden Talk today. Do you have a gardening question? You can give us a call, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to wpr.org. And this is Garden Talk. I'm Jill Nadeau, filling in for Larry Mueller today. Hope you can join us on Monday. Our physical therapist will be back, and we'll be looking at the relationship between exercise and genetics. Very interesting stuff. That's Monday on the Ideas Network. Right now, we're talking with Lisa Johnson, and we're taking your calls, and we've got full phone lines, which isn't unusual for us when Lisa's here. So let's go right back to the phones, and we'll talk to Kelly in Whitewater. Hi, Kelly.
Hi.
What can we help you with today?
I have planted outside jasmine, lavender, chamomile, and mint peppermint. And I'm wondering if I need to do anything with that over the winter.
Okay, so you've got them in pots right now.
Yeah.
Is that correct? Okay. All right, so the jasmine is not hardy, so that definitely is going to need to come in. Hopefully it hasn't died back too much already. The chamomile is hardy in our area, and lavender is also mostly hardy. Lavender is a bit of a difficult crop. When it's in ground or even if it's in a pot, it needs really good drainage, and it doesn't like winters where we get rain on top of snow because it doesn't like a lot of wetness around the crown area. With the chamomile and the lavender, probably the easiest thing to do, because it's hard to overwinter them well inside because they tend to get spindly, unless you've got, you don't happen to have like a greenhouse or a south window, do you?
No.
No. Okay. So with the lavender and chamomile, the best thing to do, if you could, would be to sink the pots in the ground, and then I would mulch them lightly with straw. And then you dig up the pots in the spring. You just put it like level with the ground, so it looks like it's planted in the ground. That'll protect the roots, and then you use the mulch to protect the crown. But the jasmine should be brought in and grown as a house plant.
And I'm certain sunny window, as sunny as possible?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Jasmine flowers best in sun.
Okay, great. Thanks for the excuse me, question, Kelly. Apparently we're catching that frog in our throat. Let's go next to Kim in Sauk County. Hi, Kim.
Hi.
What can we help you with?
I have, this spring, I planted probably 30 little boxwoods up along my walk. I've got quite a long walkway. And I'm wondering how to care for them, you know, coming into winter. They're small yet.
Mm-hmm.
And do I need to mulch those good? Should I put, like, burlap over them? I planted many. I don't want
Yeah. I was just like, wow, okay.
That's an investment.
That's a lot of boxwoods. Do you know what variety they are, just out of curiosity?
I can peek.
I'm assuming there's something that's hardy for the area, but there are some that are hardier than others. Is your walkway shaded, or is it in full sun?
It is the north of my house.
Okay.
It's facing north, but it gets full sun. I mean, and it gets sun because the lack of trees. So.
Yeah. I have a north side, too, that is not shaded, so I know what you mean. Right up next to the house it is, of course, but so I guess if you wanted to, are they planted close together or pretty far apart, or
they're about 2 feet apart.
Okay. Oh, that's going to be a pain. I was going to suggest, if you wanted to put burlap on them, you could. What you might want to do is drive a bunch of stakes into the ground, and then you can buy burlap by, usually it'll come in a roll. And what you could do is use the landscape staples, you know, kind of make a, if you have stakes on both sides of the plant, and then you drape the burlap over the top, and you want to pull it tight because you don't want it once you get snow, you don't want it like resting on top of the plants. Or if you had hoops in the ground, you could certainly use that to kind of protect them for the first couple of seasons. I guess that's probably not a bad idea, particularly if it's an area where you tend to get a lot of winter wind. Did you have the same amount of monsoons as we had down here, or was it a dry? Okay.
Yes.
So at least we're going into the winter well hydrated, so that should help with winter burn issues, but still not a bad idea with that many plants to maybe do some protection this year and the next winter as well.
Baby them a little bit.
Yeah, mm-hmm. So you could get something like, you could get rebar. It comes in, you know, different lengths, and use a hammer or a maul to pound those in. And then, you know, make sure that you pull it taut. That would be, I think, probably the best thing to do.
And those metal fence posts that you can use for like snow fencing, that works pretty good,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, that works pretty good, too.
And they'll stay in real
yeah,
well.
I think the rebar is probably a little less expensive, but yeah.
Yeah. You know, it's whatever. It's an investment again.
Yeah, it is. Right.
You are protecting something that's pretty expensive, but if they grow, it'll look beautiful. So good luck, Kim. Next up, we're going to talk to Margie, and she's in Mount Horeb. Hi, Margie.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call, Jill and Lisa.
Sure.
So I have two questions. First question relates to a Christmas rose poinsettia. I got it last year, and it was a nice size. And then I set it outside, and it got to be huge. If it blooms again, I'm hoping. So I brought it in, so it would not be frostbitten or frozen. Mm-hmm. And I don't know how to get it to bloom again. What do I do with it? Can I leave it in the cold? Fingering dark, but what's the temperature it can drop to, like in the garage, or do I need to bring it in the house, or what?
I would bring it in the house. It's kind of an involved process, and you may still get some blooms anyway. Actually, what we call blooms are actually bracts. It's a modified leaf, and that leaf will color up in response to short days. So we have some of that happening naturally, but actually, you probably should have started a couple of months ago, so it may not bloom for you, so to speak, for Christmas, but it might be a bit later. Usually, I'm trying to remember, I think it's like, at least 4, if not 8 weeks that you want to actually put it in a closet or someplace where it doesn't get light, starting at about 5 in the evening, and then you take it out again in about 8 in the morning, or, you know, before you leave for work. And then you do that until you see the bracts starting to color up, and then you can leave it out, and it should behave properly. They've been breeding them so that there's less of an issue with that than there used to be with some of the older varieties, but that's still the recommended thing, is that you try and create artificially short and long nights and short days, mm-hmm. is basically the idea for that. And then the other thing that the peace lilies. Peace lilies are tropical, and they're not affected by daylight, but the more light that you give them, the better they will bloom up to a point. They don't really like south light because they're a understory jungle type plant. So east window, west window, if they're not right up in the window, would do fine. But I have seen them bloom in, you know, offices where all they get is
it's an
just
easier plant.
Yeah, it is an easier plant to rebloom. So I wouldn't really worry too much about doing anything special for them.
And they don't
lily.
Like to get dried out though. So if they start drooping,
Water them.
Water them right away. I see so many I want to go and water them that are all drooping. That's not good because it kills the roots, right?
Once they get Eventually. You know, if it happens on a regular basis, it puts a lot of stress on the plant.
Right. Okay, well, good luck with those, Margie. Next up, we've got Jean in Waukesha. Hi, Jean. What's your question for us?
Hi. I planted a perennial garden in 2017 with mostly prairie plants.
Nice.
And so this is its first full year, and it just did terrific. It was just a wonderful season for it. But my question is now, there are all these dead stalks and stuff. Do I leave that until the spring, or
do I need to clean it up now, or, you know, are the birds going to eat the seeds? I don't really know if I need to do anything at this point.
Well, if part of your goal was to feed the birds, then sure, you can leave that material up for the birds to eat. With the prairie plants, all that you need to make sure that you do is to cut them down before new growth starts next year. So it really doesn't matter too much whether you're going to do that in the spring or in the fall. But if you were planning on feeding the birds, then yeah, I would leave it up. The nice thing about prairie plants is that they're not fussy.
No.
They're native. you don't really have to do a whole lot with them, which is awesome. And they are great for pollinators. So I really applaud you for doing that.
Right. Okay. Well, thank you, Jean. And we got about a minute before we have to go, but we did have Mary Lou send us an email, Lisa. She said she has, she's always cut back her asparagus each fall, except this year, and she did not get many stalks this spring, so she just left them all grow. How can she increase her yield?
Okay. Actually, asparagus should not be cut back in the fall. You want to wait until spring. The old fronds will help to protect the crown. So they do recommend that you do that.
Okay, so that's the reason why she didn't get
as much as she was hoping. Or if it's an older patch, that can happen too.
Okay, all right. Well, now you know, Mary Lou, thank you so much for asking that question, because there's a lot of people that grow asparagus and probably wanted to know. Well, we've been talking with Lisa Johnson on Garden Talk today. I'm Jill Nadeau. I'm filling in for Larry Mueller this week. Next week at this time, we'll rebroadcast a Garden Talk show that Larry did with Patty Nagai a while back. They talk about choosing and caring for holiday plants. It's a really good show, so hope you can join us. That's Friday at 11, of course, Saturday morning at 6, or online anytime. Stay with us. There's always more to come. Well, it's Friday, so it must be Garden Talk. Hi, I'm Jill Nadeau. Thanks for joining us on the Ideas Network. Lisa Johnson is back in the studio with us today. She's a Dane County UW Extension horticulture educator, and of course, she's very involved in the Master Gardener Volunteer Program. What gardening questions or comments do you have for us? We'll take pretty much everything. Give us a call, 1-800-642-1234, or email us at ideas@wpr.org. We do have some open lines, but we have Carol in Crandon, who has been waiting for a bit. Hi, Carol. What is your question for Lisa today?
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I have some oriental lilies in 12-inch pots that I planted early this spring, and I had tried this a year before, and right now I have them in the garage on boards covered with some leaves around the plants. And 2 years ago that didn't work. They, you know, the bulbs did not come up, so this year I planted new ones in early spring. I'm wondering, is there anything else I can do to protect, you know, the plants in my garage, or should I be digging the bulbs out and bringing them in?
Okay, Carol, what do you think there, Lisa?
Well, I wanted to check. So are you telling me the bulbs died, or they came up but they didn't bloom?
No. 2 years ago when I kept them in the garage and I didn't cover them with, you know, leaves, and the frost had hit them, they didn't come up at all.
Okay, so they died. I'm looking at where you're from. You're from Crandon, so you're way up there.
It's cold.
Yeah, it's cold up there, and I assume your garage is not heated. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay. Well, the best thing to do, I am assuming those lilies, usually lilies are zone 4 hardy, and I'm not sure whether you're 3, 4, 5, what you are up there. I'm trying to remember how close to the lake you are, because I know there are some zone 5, even 6 areas close to the lake. But probably the best thing to do is if you could sink that pot into the ground so that they would be protected. Even a 12-inch pot, if it gets frozen, can be an issue. So I don't know whether your ground is frozen now, and that may not be an issue or a likely possibility for you to do that, but that would probably be the best thing. And then once the ground is frozen, you could even put some straw over the top.
Okay.
To protect them.
All right. Well, thank you for that question, Carol, and for waiting. And we do have a couple of emails that we didn't get to before. Janie emailed to ask, how and when does she prune asters? She'd like them bushy rather than tall.
Sure. Yeah. Well, asters should be allowed to mums at any rate should be allowed to have their foliage on over the winter. So at least make sure that they have like 10 inches, even 12 inches, and then cut them back in the spring. And this is for overwintering. Asters you can cut to the ground in the fall or in the early spring. Now, if you're trying to get them bushier during the growing season, what you want to do is cut them back by about half when it gets to be June 15th, right around there. If you wait too long, you can, delay the flowering a little bit. But cutting them back by half will encourage them to produce more lateral buds, which will make them bushier.
Is that something you do with mums also?
Yes, you can pinch back your mums. Mm-hmm. And again, it's best to do it, before July, but, somewhere in that middle of June area is the best.
It's a good way to remember it.
Mm-hmm.
And then one more from Pete. He said, when's the best time to prune grapevines?
Grapevines should be pruned in March.
In March.
Yep.
Okay. Well, that's an easy answer.
And we have a great publication on how to do it at the Learning Store. It's called Growing Grapes in Wisconsin, and it's got a big section on pruning, and there are mm-hmm. different pruning protocols. It can get kind of complicated depending on whether you've got wine grapes or table grapes and what kind of structure you have to support them. March is the best time.
Okay, great. Well, let's go back to the phones. And we do have an open line, 1-800-642-1234, if you have a question. Let's go to, let's see here. I think we want to go to Dean in Mount Horeb. Hi, Dean.
Hi.
Hi, what's your question?
I have a couple raised beds, and the year before last, I had tomatoes, and other than the hornworms, they went fine. This past summer, I switched beds and planted tomatoes, and I just had tomato blight. And I sprayed them with, the baking soda stuff. I trimmed them, and, by the end of the season, they look like skeletons. I basically
sure.
couldn't get rid of it. I'm just wondering, is there something I can do over the winter with the soil to maybe get rid of spores, or, I don't know, if just not planting that bed again?
Sure. You did the right thing by moving them from one bed to another, because most of these blight fungal organisms are soil-borne. So when you grow them in the same place time after time, season after season, you tend to build up some of those fungi. Now, this year was a fungal paradise because I'm surprised to hear that people didn't have blight this year of some kind or other. The two most common are Septoria and early blight, but there are, there's anthracnose, there are other kinds of things that can get tomatoes. I would say, cleaning up the bed as best as possible, taking the tomatoes out, making sure there aren't any, dead leaves in there. I wouldn't plant in there next year if you have an option for a different bed where you haven't had the problem. But also using resistant tomato plants is going to be your friend. And it sounds like you did some pruning to increase air circulation, make sure the leaves are dry. That also can help, making sure that you water from the bottom of the plant. The problem is that Mother Nature was really not cooperating with us this year, and we had so much wet leaf surface, which is great for fungi to be able to germinate. We had so many storms come in that blew in fungal spores from elsewhere that we were just kind of really up against it this year. But do look into some of the disease-resistant tomatoes if you can. There are a ton of them, but there are, if you want to look at the Cornell website, they have some recommendations on different disease-resistant tomato plants. You can also look at Johnny's Selected Seeds. They have a list of them as well.
Okay, thank you very much for that call, Dean. Next, we have Victor in Waukesha. Hi, Victor.
Hi. Yes, my question is this. I have a raspberry patch. I live in Waukesha. I live in a town about 20 feet in diameter. It's about 6-7 years old. It's very intense. I water it. I fertilize it. I got the pH about right. Never had one raspberry. Cannot figure out why. Right next to it, immediately next to the raspberry patch, I have a mulberry tree that I planted. I transplanted it from the other part of my property, and that produces fruit great. What I've done with the raspberries is I've cut them down once, and they go back about 4 or 5 feet high. I cut them down again. I have not had one raspberry in, I would say, 6 or 7 years. Cannot figure out why.
Okay. Do you know what variety you have, or is it a mixture of varieties?
I think it's two different varieties. Because I planted two different varieties, and they were from Jung.
Okay, are they summer bloomers, or are they the so-called ever-blooming?
I think ever-blooming.
Okay, so with the ever-blooming, you would cut it down once a year at the end of the season, because they're on a one-year schedule. So every year they come up and they produce fruit. Now, if it's a summer blooming, then you have a two-year cycle. So if you cut it down at the end of the year every year, no, you're not ever going to get any fruit, because the first year they produce leaves, and the second year they produce the flowers and fruits. So while you can thin the patch for summer blooming, you want to make sure that those so-called floricanes, that you let them go 2 years, and that way you'll get flowers. So I assume, because you were cutting them twice, that maybe that's what is going on. You might want to check out our publication called Growing Raspberries in Wisconsin. It's a really good one. Does talk about the pruning and when to prune and fertilizing, water, and all of that. And that's on the Learning Store site, if you just Google Learning Store UWEX.
Would it make sense for him to cut half of them down and leave the other half just to see?
Well, you could try that, especially if you don't know whether mm-hmm. you've got the summer blooming or the fall blooming. But, you know, depending on where they are located in the patch, you might be cutting down the ones that you...
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah,
you want to save, or mm-hmm, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. A lot of times people run into that, where they either don't know the variety, or they don't know, or they know that they have both and they've intergrown with mm-hmm. each other. So it's really tough.
Now, do you have a way of keeping track of the things that you plant? So, for instance, you buy some raspberries, you plant them, and there's that little tag. Do you file that away? Do you write it down? I mean, what's your way of keeping track of the type of plants that you have?
Well, I wish I were more organized than
don't
I
we all?
Yeah. Some things I've been able to leave, you know, in the ground, but I tend to, you know, there's a lot of raking that needs to be done, and then the tags
yeah,
disappear.
Come off. Yeah.
Certainly the best thing to be able to do would be to have a more sturdy, you know, tag mm-hmm. Of some kind. Some people like to save the tag and actually make like a little drawing, a map of where they are. And that's great, mm-hmm. if you can do that, or at least keep a list of what's growing in, like, this is on the west side of the house, or these are the raspberries that I have, and these are the different kinds of strawberries that I have. So,
because we always think we'll remember. But,
oh yeah,
but we
yeah.
don't. I don't. I
we don't. Don't. Yeah, and when you get, like, I have 100 varieties of hosta every
oh,
once in a
gosh.
While. I'm like, what was that one?
Okay, well, let's go back to the phones. We've got Barbara in De Pere. Hi, Barbara. What's your question for us today, Barbara? Oh, hold on, Barbara. Sorry, are you there, Barbara?
Yes, I am.
Okay, what's your question?
Okay. I wondered when and how far back I should cut my iris, because the leaves are still green, unlike everything else in the garden.
Sure.
So, I wondered if it was still sending goodies down to the bulbs or what.
Sure. That's a really good question. Now, are these the German bearded iris, or are they like Siberian iris?
Oh, I don't know. Well, it's a bearded.
It's a bearded. Okay. Bigger flowers in end of May, early June. And they have the little fat rhizomes?
Yes.
Okay. All right. So we're probably dealing with German bearded iris then. Okay. So yes, there are actually two times of year that it's not a bad idea to cut them back. A lot of people will cut them back after they finish blooming. And the reason for that is to try and control the darn iris borers. Oh, those are so repulsive.
Oh, they're terrible.
It takes a lot to get me grossed out,
yeah,
they
but
they're kind of gross. and what happens is that the adult, which is a moth, will lay the egg in the leaf, and then when the egg hatches, the little larva bores its way down and gets into the rhizome and gets really large and eats out your
ick factor high.
Yes, mm-hmm. Ick factor is high. So a lot of people will cut their leaves back by about halfway after they bloom. Then for winter, yes, you should cut them back. I'd say it's getting late enough in the season that you don't need to worry about it too much. I usually leave mine about 4 inches high. And also fall, it's getting a little late now to do it, but usually October, if you've had problems with the darn iris borer, September, October, you dig up the rhizomes, you check them out, make sure that they don't have any residents in them that you don't want. If they do, you cut that part out and discard them, and then you replant them, making sure that the rhizome is about half above the soil and half below the soil. So you plant those kind of horizontally.
Yeah, because they grow pretty well. I mean, I've thrown some away and
yeah,
they grow
yeah,
in the
they grow,
compost
they,
pile.
They do very well if they don't, if the iris borer doesn't get them, they
yeah,
do really
exactly.
well.
As far as breaking them up, is mm-hmm. it also a good time to do that in October, or is that better?
Yeah, September, October is
okay.
fine.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. All right, sounds good. Next, let's go to Jenny in Green Bay. Hi, Jenny.
Hi, I have a question. First of all, thanks for taking my call, and I apologize. I was eating.
Oh. Well, it is lunchtime. We understand.
Right? I have a question. I have some grape hyacinths
mm-hmm.
and crocuses that came with the house.
Oh, neat.
And I love them, but I don't love where they are.
Ah.
I would like to
move
them, or at least get them better arranged. Is it okay if I dig them up? And if I do, when should I do that?
The best time to do it would be September, October. I think you could probably still get away with it now if your ground isn't frozen, though. You know, just make sure to keep some of the soil around them. If it were earlier in the season, I'd say just, you know, dig them up and
mm-hmm. yeah. Yeah.
throw them in another hole. but since it's getting a little bit later, I would kind of try and dig them up as a clump and move them that way. They should be fine. If failing that, if you really wanted to move them in spring, you could wait until after they bloom. But you want to try and avoid stress on them. So usually we tell people early to mid-fall.
Because they do kind of disappear once the leaves are done.
Yeah,
it's hard to find them.
Right, that's hard to find them. Mm-hmm. Now, the Muscari, the grape hyacinth, often will produce leaves this time of year, so you can
Those aren't quite so bad.
Yeah, but you're right. The crocus, once the leaves are gone, it's hard to find them. So after they bloom in the spring would probably be easier from that point of view.
Or maybe mark them.
Yeah, or mark them and so then dig them up in fall.
Yeah. Okay, great. Thanks for that call, Jenny. Let's go to Mary in Green Bay. Hi, Mary. What's your question?
Hi. I have two things. You were talking about the borer that affects the iris.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't get to hear that because I was in the other room. I had that happen to me this spring, and I started cleaning out the garden, and it was just full of the worm.
Yeah.
And I actually cut the iris and threw away the mushy part.
Yep, that's exactly what you should do.
And did whatever you have to do to kill those worms.
Mm-hmm.
So then I put them back in after I was done.
Yep, so, sounds like you did the right thing.
I have never cut the leaves off from the iris before.
Mm-hmm.
So I should do that?
Yeah, yeah, we do recommend that for over the winter. And then if there were any larvae overwintering in there, it's unlikely, but you would be getting rid of them.
Okay. You had another question about raspberries? Yeah. Mm-hmm.
When we moved here 12 years ago, the first year there was some raspberries that formed
the canes.
Canes, yeah.
The cane.
Mm-hmm.
And then the next year there were very few. And then I was told I should clean out the old canes.
Sure.
And I have. I still haven't gotten any raspberries. Now, this year, I had a lot of leaves, but I never got a raspberry.
Okay, well.
I don't fertilize them, so I don't know what to fertilize them with.
Sure. My guess is that you have summer blooming raspberries and that you've probably, what you had this year were the primacanes. So they do produce leaves the first year. They don't actually flower and fruit until the second year. So if you leave those up over winter, thin out the scrawny ones, and you can tip them a little bit if you want, but it's not absolutely necessary. In spring, figure out what part of it is dead and what part of it is alive, and leave the live parts, and hopefully those will fruit, and then you can cut them down after that. So with the summer blooming, they have that 2-year life cycle. Now, if they were fall blooming raspberries, then you would cut them down in the fall, and then they would come up in the spring and fruit, and then you'd cut them down again. So it's just the difference between those two different life cycles. The other thing is, if it is an older patch, like, 15 years or so, you might want to start with new plants because they do have a productive lifetime.
Okay, great. Well, good luck, Mary. And real quick, before we have to say goodbye, Lisa, we wanted to talk a little bit about, those trees and shrubs that were sitting in water for weeks. Is that something that we need to be concerned about?
It depends on the type of plant. Laura Gell, our woody ornamental specialist, wrote a really great publication on effects of flooding on trees and shrubs. And she has a nice list there of plants that are sensitive, middle of the road, and tolerant. And for folks who have experienced flooding several times over, you might want to think about, if you're having issues, looking at that list of tolerant species and maybe replacing some of your intolerant ones with tolerant.
Sure, there'll be an effect somewhere along the line.
They may see some dieback.
Yeah. Okay, well, great. Thank you all for all your calls. And Lisa, thank you for your answers. Lisa is the Dane County UW Extension Horticulture Agent, and she stops by every once in a while to give us all kinds of great information. Thanks for coming, Lisa. We really appreciate that.
Thanks for having me.
You bet. Please join us next week for an archive edition of Garden Talk. Larry talks to Patty Nagai about choosing and caring for holiday plants. I'm Jill Najoe. Thank you so much for listening to the Ideas Network. We'll hopefully see you again or hear you again next week.